This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for tout, or is it like part of the program?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
I'm just kidding.
The man you see is the place to be.
Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
I'm not the one who thrives on whining about carriages that are 3 inches from my fucking car.
So if it's too much for you and your big cock of the walk Knights of Columbus fat cat,
when does it end, JR?
To the fucking thing, then what do you want? What do you want?
When does it end?
You're making the poor guy making minimum wage while you're sitting there with our mento going through the coffers.
Party people in the place to be.
5 years. 5 years we've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
It's not Austin in L.A. It's not Cabana in Chicago. It's not Conrad down in Alabama. Place to Be Nation presents Scott Criscolo and JT Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero. We're live here on this Monday evening inside a dilapidated PCBN studio. Scott Criscolo, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place de la Nación. It does. You did show some pictures today of some of Studio A being lifted and dropped in various places and spread out. Welcome, everyone, to episode 507. Of the longest running episodic of the fucking gold standard. You showed us Mr. D'Amato and I some melancholy pictures today of the couch finally going off in its merry way.
It's like the last episode of Primetime, or when they did Action Zone, the last episode of Action, like you know, the sets just being taken down around me,
right.
And I'm just here in the skeleton studio, so. I set up my coffee table, but the couch is gone. So I'm sitting in a computer chair, and I'm like directly under the TV. It's very off. Like I've done this podcast pretty much since when I moved in May of 2012 in the same spot.
Right.
Like, so this is like the first time I'm somewhere else recording this podcast since May of 2012. So it's very, I'm all thrown off. So bear with me tonight. But yeah, I feel like it's weird. Like we've talked, but we haven't really done a show. So I was like, well, I'm all over the place overall. But it's been a couple weeks. On our last episode, we did the 1188 Madison Square Garden. And the one before that was Survivor Series 88. And we're still on this weekend. It's been about a month and a half. Still on this fucking weekend of 1988. It's funny because when we started, when we kicked it off, I think we were on like the actual week, right? When we did Survivor Series.
Yes.
And yep, a month and a half after it.
Exactly.
All right, but joining us as always, because it is an episode of Saturday Night's Main Event, is the host of Greetings from Allentown. He is a co-host of the Adams Division podcast, and you hear him pretty much our main third guy now at this point. That's Peter Winston. Peter, hi.
Hello. I am sitting on at least a 15-year-old piece of furniture, so it's nice and comfy, and I'm ready to discuss WWF November 1988 literally at any time. Break glass in case of emergency. This is what I am. This is what I was born to do.
Well, we're running out of 88 material. I think we only got, one more. We got the December house show, and then we're on to 89. So
yes,
there you go. Who would have thought, Scott, when we started 85 with this reboot? Was it 2 years ago almost, right? It was early December 16.
Early December 16. We're coming up on almost exactly 2 years. Crazy. So we talk to you again, Peter, after tonight. We'll be in a new year in real life and a new year in the chat or in the reboot. So exactly 30 years separation. Amazing.
Yes. Wow.
As JR mentioned, we probably should have done this in reverse, but that's just how we are. We did the live show on this date, the November 26th, 1988 MSG House show with Mr. Atherton. And now we are doing the November 26th, 1988 Saturday night's main event. which was taped on, I think it was a, let me look. I think it was a week old. I have the, I have it open right here. Let's see. I believe it was a, I think it's a week old. I think it was taped on like the 16th, so maybe it's like 10 days old. Let's see. Let me just, do we have it on? Oh, we don't have it on our, we did a reboot, a written refresh of this on PlaceToBeNation.com. It doesn't have the date. Do either of you have it in front of you? I think it was the 16th, so I think it's like 10 days.
Yeah, that sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the 16th. I thought I had it on here, and I don't. So we already did where the roster was. They were at the Garden, and I think they were Joe Louis Arena. That's right. That was the other place they were at. This is the final Saturday
November
night's
16th,
main event.
Okay,
so I was right. Okay, so 10 days. So it was before Survivor Series. This was taped.
Yep.
So. And we are live at I guess this is a new building. But for them, I guess it is. But it is the Arco Arena in Sacatomato, otherwise known as Sacramento, California. And Peter, we were talking earlier today. Was this building new? Why did I think they had opened like a couple years earlier? Was this a new building?
Yeah, at that time it was brand new, and okay. I want to say that they built it to attract the Kings to move from Kansas City, I think it was.
Yeah, they were in Kansas City. Yep.
Yeah, in like 85, and so they got them to move because of the building, but they didn't have it ready yet, It took a couple of years.
So there's actually, Sky, you're kind of right, because there was an original Arco Arena that opened in 85 to 88, and that's where the Kings played for those 3 years after coming from Kansas City, and then this opened in November of 88, so November 8th. So, I mean, it was only a week old.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, Vince likes those. He likes those new buildings. He likes to set the attendance record when nobody else has had a chance to
right out of the gate
to go in. Yeah.
Well, you have to wonder if, like, I wonder if they were booked for the old one. Like, as if they were. I mean, how could they have booked this knowing for sure it was going to be open, right? So they probably just figured we would run Sacramento, and then they just lucked out that it happened to open the week before. But I mean, it had to be the first event there, I would think, unless there was a basketball game in between. But I mean,
well,
we're literally talking
great,
8 days.
They showed great confidence, because they were kind of selective in where they would shoot TV, at least by that point, because they would only do it, like, they kept returning to Fort Wayne, Indiana. For whatever reason, they really liked that venue. And I'm wondering, did they build an entire new arena called the Arco Arena? Because now I get my head really twisted in this. This is a lot. This is the most anybody's ever talked about Arco outside of a Kevin Nash shoot.
Or Todd Weber.
Todd Weber.
The original opened in 85, and it closed in 88, converted to office buildings. So they literally built it just to temporarily accommodate the Kings.
Wow. Wow, that is – well, that's
nicknamed
that's
the Madhouse on Market Street. Kings games in a small venue were 100% sold out. Kings left in 88 to go to the new Arco Arena, now the Sleep Train Arena, built 1 mile to the west, so pretty much right next door.
Think of it as the Cape Cod Melody Tent of NBA venues.
There you go.
But what's funny is that Monday Night Raw that is airing as we tape this right now is in the exact same building, which is kind of spooky.
Yeah, that happened. We were saying, Scott, that happens a lot with us. These weird coincidences, but Raw tonight is in this exact arena. Odd to say the least. So I do want to announce before we get into the show. At the end of the show, if you stay tuned, we're going to make an announcement regarding our Christmas spectacular that's dropping next week on Christmas Eve and a contest that comes along with it. So stick with us toward the end. We'll get into that. Just wanted to tease it. But why don't we go ahead and dive in, Scott? Really, no other notes. Like you mentioned, we talked about the other event going on live on this day already, and no other news and notes. We talked about the syndicated shows as well. So from Arco, like you mentioned, back on NBC for the final time of 1988, we get promos to kick us off from The Ultimate Warrior, Andre the Giant and Bobby Heenan, Randy Savage and Elizabeth, Ted DiBiase and Virgil, and Hulk Hogan. Then we get our opening animation. Vince and Jesse welcome us in and set the stage for the special Thanksgiving weekend event. Go backstage where Mean Gene is with Mr. Fuji and the Super Ninja One, who Gene says has a blend of martial arts and Western scientific wrestling. It's quite the blend. The blend. It's like if you go to like a smoothie shop or something. I'm going to have a blend of martial arts and Western scientific wrestling and a shot of protein, please.
Yeah. Give me a drop of mystery and intrigue.
A little Oriental mixed in. Thank you. Fuji says he's trained in secrecy for 7 years on 7 continents in 7 arts. Fuji then spouts more nonsense, and then we're out. So they're really hyping Super Ninja 1. Yes. Lots going on. So, Peter, any thoughts on, obviously we know the 7 continents. Any thoughts on the 7 arts?
I couldn't
Clay,
even
like
hark
working
it,
with
yes.
Clay, maybe?
I picture he was the original guy doing in the movie Ghost, that that pottery thing.
Pottery, yes.
But then they used Swayze instead.
Maybe like charcoal, drawings.
Yes.
Crayon.
Well, clearly he was a master of the martial arts.
Yeah, which... I don't know if he's quite the master. He blends them. Mm-hmm.
He blends them.
I don't know if he's master.
He blends them in, but he's a master of any of them.
That's he could be. Gene talks to the Ultimate Warrior, gives off his usual warrior promo. So that does bring us to our opener, and that is the Intercontinental Champion Ultimate Warrior taking on Super Ninja 1. Very random here. But I like it, because it's a Warrior had a big night at Survivor Series, and this is another chance to showcase him. And we've talked about this, that he really hasn't been... Like prevalent on Saturday Night's Main Event. And Vince actually even notes that this is his debut on Saturday Night's Main Event. So he's been around since, what, mid-'87? And mm-hmm. this is really his first yep. introduction to the NBC audience. So I thought it was kind of shrewd to give him a match like this. And it gives him a chance to kill someone that's not really worth anything. It's a name. They can hype him up. But you're not beating anyone of substance. So Warrior charges out to a good pop. Jesse talks about how crazy he is. Ninja attacks the bell. Warrior easily shrugs it off and slugs away. Ninja looks completely lost. He's just making weird mannerisms, walking around in circles. Warrior kicks him to the floor and batters him some more. Vince then notes that it's Warrior's debut. Ninja gets zero offense as Warrior finishes him with a press slam and a splash. And again, an effective squash, but it's just a squash. Ninja was treated like a joke. And I'm actually kind of surprised that they associated Fuji with him, especially with the turn that had just happened. Like, you just put Fuji, we went through this huge angle with him, and it kind of looks goofy here. I kind of thought they should have given Jimmy Hart the Ninja, because you can then just explain it that, well, he's just trying to get like anything he can to get revenge for Honky, so he brought this guy in. Like, I know why they have Fuji, because obviously he's Asian, and that's what they did back then. But it's like, why not, like, at least make it some sense? Like, it just seems like a weird usage of a guy you just elevated in the managerial ranks to put him with this loser that clearly sucks. You can't hide it. But Warrior's a machine. I went dud, Scott.
Yeah, I went dud too. Your match time was 2:11, nice and quickie. Incidentally, for those that that may not know, the Super Ninja is none other than Rip Oliver, who was a wrestler from the Pacific Northwest Territory. During his time in the Pacific Northwest, he set the record for holding the NWA Pacific Northwest Heavyweight title the most. Mm-hmm. He also held numerous tag titles during his career. Left the Northwest to wrestle WWF. He had one house show match with the in the WWF in September of this year, and this is his only on-screen appearance. So mm-hmm. there you go. He didn't look like a svelte ninja. He kind of looked like a frumpy ninja.
He looked like he washed his dishes at the buffet, and then he came out here. They threw the mask on him.
It's like he makes sushi. Yeah, I agree with you on they did it because, you know, the 80s of xenophobia and, you know, that must, if he's an Asian warrior, he must be with Fuji.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's too. I mean, I get why they did it, but it's just weird timing that they would do that. It's like,
yeah.
Jimmy was right there to say, oh, well, look, you know, you can just say Fuji, like tipped me off on this guy that he knows. You know what I mean? Like, and that doesn't look as bad. It's almost like he sold a shit bill of goods. Like, this, they made it like Fuji scoured the globe for, like, elite talent, and then this fucking schlub just gets embarrassed.
I know. Yeah. No, it's a little rough, but this was nothing more than to just showcase Warrior as a monster champ, Peter, and that's about it, pretty much.
Well, for those of you who remember a Greetings from Allentown episode where there was another character named the Super Ninja in the AWA, this is not the same guy who was wearing the swastika on his gloves in 1987 on ESPN, yeah. Which is one of the biggest what the fuck moments I've ever seen since I've been doing my own podcast.
Why are you surprised? The Harris brothers have swastikas on their arms in fucking 2018.
Yes. Well, I don't really cover their era too much, but okay. you can tell that it's a regular, a plain white guy because he's wearing the full body suit. And, like, you can see no skin at all. It's certainly very interesting to see the Ultimate Warrior in white trunks. You wouldn't see him break out that uniform system very often. I guess he was a big fan of Jimmy Garvin or something. I don't know if you caught this commentary, because I don't know. This match was nothing. So I was listening to Jesse and Vince hoping that something would happen. They challenged each other to a pose down, which, boy, I wish we got that. That would have been great. Jesse and Vince in a pose down? That would have been fantastic. See, I guess I was a little generous, and I gave this one star because it did what it was supposed to do. But the question at the end of the day is, why the Super Ninja? Well, it's a guy. Probably nobody else was willing to do this because you think, well, Honky Tonk Man? No, you want to save that for house shows. What about a guy like Greg Valentine? Valentine was probably like, no, sorry, I've been in this business 18 years. I'm not doing this shit. I think that the guy for this spot would have been the Red Rooster. And I'll tell you why. It's because you'd already, at the Survivor Series, started that little tension with him and Heenan, and all they were doing was ribbing the guy left and right anyway. Right. So let Warrior ragdoll him on the National Broadcasting Company for 2 minutes and 11 seconds or however it was, and then you can continue that Heenan thing. But
That's a good point. That would have been a good use of him. You embarrassed me on national TV. You had a title. I got you a title shot. You know, this is how you treat me. I got you in the main event of Survivor Series. Yeah, like I like that idea. It would have made more sense.
But this Super Ninja is such a great footnote in history because it's the only time you ever see this character make an appearance, to the point where I wish I had nominated him in the GWWE last year. I probably would have ranked him like 47th just to be a contrarian.
Great. And then we have to spend 40 minutes on Bennett defending the decision. Why?
Well, yes. Well, I just think it's an insult that Uncle Elmer got ranked by somebody and got nominated. Although, now that I think about it, weren't you saying, I think the last time I was on, that Terry Taylor as Red Rooster didn't even get nominated?
Nope, he didn't.
He got nominated. No, you're right. No one even nominated him. No. I don't think he even got one. It's either he didn't get one vote or he didn't get enough to I can't remember. He might have gotten nominated, but not enough to actually be nominated. You know, like he was named. I can check real quick, but so it's pathetic that no one cared enough to at least put him into contention. He might have gotten a vote. Let me see really quick. I can find out.
I was gonna say Lawrence, it's Terry Taylor.
Yeah, he got two votes. No, it's he got two votes. Two people mentioned him on the Facebook page, but he never got a third vote to actually become nominated to be eligible for the project. No one cared enough to say, oh, you know what? He only needs one more. So that to me was hilarious. That he's a name guy. You know, he's not garbage. I mean, he's not whatever. There were way worse people than him that got onto that list.
Well, Super Ninja probably has the highest average number of people watching per match in his WWF career of anybody in history.
Yes.
Because I don't know what the rating was for this, but I mean, even Hogan, okay, he can't touch this because he played before 4,000 seat arenas.
What about Lawrence Taylor?
Yeah, I guess. All right, you got me there. Boy, you showed me.
Snooki. Snooki's got more.
All right. All right, So Super Ninja's in the top 35. Yes.
You could say TV if you eliminate pay per view.
I guess, yeah.
I guess it would depend on how much Kevin Federline that Raw drew. I don't know. But,
Should have put more thought into that.
Yeah, as usual.
They should have put more thought into putting Super Ninja in the ring. That's what they should have done.
All right, but, are you done waxing on Super Ninja, Peter?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we get a recap video of Hercules' health issues. Health issues. Yes, he does have health issues. Issues with Heenan and DiBiase. There's not even the word health written anywhere. I don't know why that popped in my head. Jesse chats with Ted DiBiase and Virgil. DiBiase says Hercules was bought and is a slave, and he can do what he wants with him. Tonight, they're here to take possession of what's his. DiBiase says he won't touch a slave. People like him leave stuff like this for people like Virgil. You can interpret that however you wish. We're going to leave it alone here. Gene then chats to Hercules, who will be Ted DiBiase's property if he loses tonight. Herc says he's a free man. And that does bring us to Hercules taking on the bodyguard, Virgil. Jesse says Herc looks like Kunta Kinte, and if the chain fits, wear it. So that gets us off to a very strong start. Jesse just loves this fucking thing. The feud rages on, and despite its questionable content, it's a done okay job to establish Herc as a face. DiBiase and Virgil both attack him at the bell. Herc swats it off and cleans house. Virgil comes back with some soft strikes. Herc turns that around, knocks Virgil to the floor. DiBiase runs some interference, but that doesn't work as Herc keeps control, battering Virgil with aggressive hard strikes. Ted's pretty pissed at ringside. Virgil's getting his lunch handed to him. Jesse says Ted may want to consider a new bodyguard after this. Herc hits a nice running power slam for the win. Ted flips out on the floor, and then Herc hoists Virgil up and chucks him down into his boss. Another squash, which again makes sense given the story. And it was good that Virgil got no offense because it keeps Hercules strong as he's getting established in this role. Like, we need Virgil controlling for 2 or 3 minutes. Just have Herc destroy him. I do question having 2 squashes to open the show. Like, this maybe could have been a little bit later or just broke them up and not had them both here. It's just an odd way to start the show. It's pretty much the same match back to back. I went 0.5 star on this one, though, just because of the storyline stuff. What you got, Peter?
I was rather generous in giving it a full star. Because it accomplished what it set out to do with Virgil, like you said, not getting any offense. But can I rewind to the opening promo with Ted DiBiase when they're doing the intros in front of the green screen and how Ted was wearing the white thing that he would wear under his suit jacket, but he had no suit jacket on.
Yes.
It was the most bizarre look.
He looked a little disheveled.
Well, maybe it's like on Seinfeld when Jerry wants to iron his, have his pants stay nice and ironed when he's sitting in the chair getting his makeup done, so he puts them on after. So maybe that's what it was. Maybe leaving the jacket for later.
I kept waiting to see what suit DiBiase would be wearing out, not to turn this into an episode of Letters from Kayfabe, but Ted is wearing the green suit, and I bet that there was probably a problem with the green screen where Ted looked like he was part of the wall or something, and that would not have come off. And speaking of attire, do you like the Virgil attire here better than the 91 boxing shorts stuff? Or I was kind of torn on that.
Remind me.
He had like long tights. Red tights, but like a that's deep right. red, like a
that's right,
like a
yeah.
darker,
like
red.
The purplish almost. The yeah. What the fuck is that? Because of the V.
Cranberry?
Not violet. Not violet, but like it was like a Crayola color with a V.
Yeah,
anyway.
Maroon.
He'd also have the long tights in 91 as well. He'd have the candy striper tights later.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. I blocked that from my memory. And I wish that I could block some of his work from my memory in this match because he was atrocious. Like, when he would do a sunset flip... it would look like he was doing a sunset flip when it was really a backdrop spot. He was, for a guy who had actually wrestled in Memphis, I guess it was a year and a half before this. I mean, I don't know if it was ring rust or what it was, but he looked horrible in there. So thankfully it was short. Mm-hmm. And Hercules, when he did that face turn, they did that third mega power thing with the seances and all that bullshit. It showed a lot of promise.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I'm not sure what happened, if he just got lost in the shuffle like he did as a heel in the Heenan family. But,
and it's weird, too, because it's not like they pick up faces into 89. You know, it's not like anyone shows up that, like, gets in his way, really. Like, Jake is already there, and Savage turns heel. So it's like who's like the fourth face come like WrestleMania,
and Jake goes away for most of the year too.
Right.
So I don't know
Duggan?
What Ronnie Garvin.
Yeah, Duggan probably. I mean Demolition, but if you're talking just singles, it's weird. Yeah, it's real weird that they didn't use him more. I was thinking that too, and I was actually thinking as well. Like, and I guess we'll get into this when we get closer to it. But I was surprised that they didn't continue Herc and DiBiase until Mania, because they, you know, it's still a thing come Rumble time, and when you look at what they did at Mania, is not much. So I'm surprised they didn't just polish it off there.
I'm kind of surprised at that too. I gave it a half star. JR is subliminally thinking that Virgil's fighting for the healthcare that Ted DiBiase is not supplying in his company, and maybe that's why.
Was called unconstitutional, right? So May's pissed off about it.
Ted doesn't have Ted doesn't have 50 employees. He doesn't have to offer.
He doesn't need that. He doesn't want that fucking public shit.
Not enough.
He wants
the good stuff. So. Yeah,
he wants the good stuff. But anyway, I agree with you, JR. They probably should have spread these squashes out. But of course, what we would have later in the show probably took this. They probably could have had this last, maybe. They probably could have had this last and done the last match now. But having said that, I think Herc needed, obviously, the big squash. Your match time, not much, I don't think. 3:20. So a little, actually, it was longer than I thought it was. But I gave it a half star, too. And again, you don't see much here. It's a pretty big, it's a pretty easy easy win for Herc. And obviously, the situation with DiBiase is not over. And I'm assuming we will see the two of them down the line. But a good spot for Herc. He needed to kind of the spotlight to himself and get an easy win to kind of really put over himself with the crowd. So I had no problem with it, but yeah, maybe another part of the show, maybe not do back-to-back squashes, but, yeah, DiBiase like out there, he was all like half sweat. Maybe he did a couple of bumps and then forgot to put his jacket on.
But the green screen thing sounds likely. I would think that's likely the case that Peter mentioned. He's got the green suit on, green screen. They probably said, take that thing off. You're blending in completely. I kind of liked it, though. It was almost like he was warming up, just getting dressed, and they pulled him out here for the promo, and he was going back to finish getting ready. But it is funny that he left that shirt part on, and, like, you know, they didn't just say, take it off and just go bare-chested. they had that on. But I kind of like it. It's almost like he was, you know, training or whatever and getting prepped, and they pulled him aside, but...
I think it was a necessary win for Herc, to get a squash and look strong there. But perhaps from a formatics perspective, maybe having this later on in the show and maybe bump the tag that we'll talk about later.
But otherwise,
that's perfectly fine. Work rate wise, we're not having a great evening, but we're
no.
also. But we're also dealing with guys that aren't wrestling every day. We got I don't know if Virgil versus Super Ninja opened the show, Peter.
Oh,
then we'd really need health care for all of our mental states after having to deal with that, with the 6 minutes of that trash. But
well, they're doing the always awkward thing of taping something before a pay per view that's going to air afterwards. Even
right.
though Saturday Night's Main Event operates kind of in its own universe, I guess.
Yeah, it does.
It definitely
almost like
does.
A separate audience. Yeah.
And it's been like that a lot longer than expected. Like, I knew in the beginning it was kind of like that, but I wasn't aware of just how really separate it was. I mean, they pretty much act like they have to catch everybody up on everything that's happened in between. And, like, it really does treat it like it's a whole new audience every time, which I think is shrewd because they probably figure they have this brand new captive audience coming in that may just be going upon Saturday Night Live and happen to catch this or whatever. So I think it's a smart way to do it, but it is interesting looking back at it, like just how distinct it was a lot of the time.
Well, I can't believe they didn't plug that they were going to be on NBC during the Survivor Series, because they would do that in the later years when
right.
they would actually be on. I don't know. It just seemed a little strange to me.
This whole thing's been strange. I know we talked about it in the past, and we had some info about how they weren't really allowed to plug their other stuff on NBC. Because remember, was it before 2 or 3? I think it was before 3, the one we were talking about, where they didn't talk about WrestleMania, like, at all.
Yes.
So the whole thing is an odd partnership, so who knows? but yes, no, you're right. Later they would. I remember, like, in 90, for sure, they definitely promote that Saturday Night's Main Event. But maybe ratings were down at that point or something.
Mm.
All right, so there you go. It's more than anyone's ever talked about, Hercules and Virgil.
Yes.
Well, you know, with all these great matches so far, I'm kind of in the mood for some for maybe a Christmas classic, since now we're only six, seven, eight days. I don't even know how many days away, but we're getting close.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I happen to have one queued up. You want to hear it?
Oh, yes, I would.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With network subscriptions selling, but everyone telling you that they don't care. It's the most wonderful time of the year. They say it's the crap crappiest season of all. With their message board meetings and gay heavy breathing and no friends to call. But they say it's the crappiest season of all. There'll be Roman Reigns choking and JBL joking and main event pushes for show. There'll be hilarious slammies and tales of the glories of legends from long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be divas all prancing, walls are dancing, but media season is near. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be Mick Foley whining, claims of interest declining, but they'll still be reviewing my show. There'll be dirt sheet news stories of tales of the glories of Nielsen's long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. But we all are knowing reviews will be glowing, cause Cena's comeback is near. It's the most wonderful time. Yes, the most wonderful time. December's the most wonderful time of our year. Fuck you, Chris Golo. You stupid pig, you're getting coal.
Well, there you go. Hopefully everyone enjoyed that nostalgic piece of holiday cheer, which I think actually resonates year after year, no matter when it was originally penned. All right, we head back to last month, and this kind of illustrates our point here, where Sammy's main event, it's almost like nothing's happened in this since then, but we go back to last month, where Andre had his run-in with Damian. Gene is with Andre and Bobby, who call out Jack Tunney for screwing Andre out of the title, but say they will get it back tonight. Gene is with Randy Savage and Elizabeth, who had a very special Thanksgiving. I don't say why, but they did. Savage says to be a great champion like Hogan, he has to beat the Giant, and he'll do just that. He calls Bobby a snake and says he's surprised that Andre isn't scared of him, too. And that does bring us to our big main event match, the World Championship on the line, as Macho Man Randy Savage takes on Andre the Giant. Big time here as Andre gets another crack at the title in what's been a dominant year for him. Andre's entrance, awesome as always. Superior presence. Savage and Liz are out to a big pop, and they look fantastic, and just really kind of a star-laden match. Savage tries to stick and move early, but Andre catches him and lays the wood in the corner. Jesse says Macho isn't wrestling smart, as any time he has a window, he doesn't slip free and instead stays close. Andre chokes away as Bobby runs interference. Andre works a surfboard submission while mixing in chokes and strikes. Savage tries to come back, but Andre smothers him and leans on him. Savage eventually jawjacks Andre, and then peppers away as the crowd wheels him on. Andre cuts him off, but Savage comes back and unloads a flurry of axe blows, punches, and kicks. Jesse says he finally gets smart. Jake the Snake shows up at ringside, and Savage is wildly dumping strikes all over the challenger. Andre knocks Savage to the corner, but then gets preoccupied with Jake, who hit his sack under the ring. After a break, Savage is still in control as Andre's freaking out and telling Bobby to find Damian while he's getting beaten on. Jesse is pissed about Jake's antics, and Andre has completely lost focus. Andre finally sharpens and knocks Savage down and sits on him, but he goes right back to barking at Bobby. Savage chases Bobby away, but Bobby finds a sack as Andre beats on Savage. Jake then comes back and chases Bobby into the ring for the DQ. Savage smashes Bobby, throws him into Andre, who falls into the ropes. Savage welcomes Jake in. He unleashes Damian as Andre is just freaking out. And then he finally breaks free and runs away before the snake gets near him. Fun match, these guys, yet again. Even with all that fuck shit junk at the end, didn't really mar it too much. Stuff was fine, too. Keeps Andre from getting pinned while pushing the Jake angle. Savage really could use a pin, though, at some point. We get a lot of these with him. But whatever, what can you do? And I love Savage's wild flurry at the end. I thought that was fantastic out there. It was really, really good. So I went 2.5, a notch down from that first match, which I loved at MSG. This is kind of in line with that rematch we watched, Scott. But I enjoyed it, and, you know, Andre's had a hell of a year, and this kind of now finally signals the end of his main event title stuff, right? I mean, from here on out, he's pretty much upper mid-card, but he's for the most part, I think, done with the world title. So since WrestleMania 3, he's pretty much been in the picture, other than, the, you know, when he was out with the back injury. But pretty much for a year and a half, he's been there in the world title scene, and now this is pretty much it for him.
Yes, I gave it 2 stars. I thought the match was a lot of fun. Savage and Andre, obviously, and we're talking about two guys who, as we know historically, apparently Andre was not the biggest Savage fan, but they seemed to work very well together. They had good chemistry. I believe it was the longest match of the evening at 8:51. Yeah, the lack of Savage pins is a little disconcerting. Because it was kind of needed for him. At the same time, he's putting on awesome matches and he has the belt. So I don't know if the fans at the time actually even cared whether he's actually getting pinfalls or not, because he's putting on great matches and he's leaving the ring as champion. I didn't get the double DQ. Like, it made no sense to me because like they're fighting in the ring, and then Bobby comes in chased by Jake, and then the bell rings for like no reason. I didn't understand. The end of the match seemed a little weird. Having said that, the match is fine. I mean, we talk about, you know, on our next episode, JR, when we finish up the calendar year, when we do like our year MVP, obviously we have to put Andre in the running. I mean, he's been unbelievable every time we've seen him. He's been on fire, promos, in match, post match, anything he's done in the ring, whether it's just, you know, causing trouble or, I mean, he's been amazing. And when we talk about kind of our end of year awards on the next episode, or the next vault, I should say, that he's a guy that we need to talk about for the MVP of 88.
Yeah. I am so excited to see too how much it carries into 89. Like, this Andre stuff is such new territory for me, because I had only really, you know, I never really focused on it or saw all these. To me, it's like, I mean, unbelievable. How awesome. I thought he was cooked by Survivor Series 87, just because WrestleMania 4 is so shaky.
You
don't really see much, but God, he's been so fantastic. So I'm curious to see when it is that the cliff really comes for him. And I think it's at least, you know, a bit into 89 anyway. I don't think he's there yet. So it'll be curious when it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Your thoughts on the match, Peter, and then what are your thoughts on Andre as a whole for 88? Your thoughts?
Oh, I mean, you're right. It's been a revelation. I mean, I've watched more than just the Saturday Night Main Events. Andre's not wrestling on TV in 88 necessarily, but I enjoyed what he contributed in that SummerSlam match against the Mega Powers, which if I have one regret about this match, I wish that they had done the spot from SummerSlam where Savage goes for the big elbow and Andre gets the foot up.
Yes,
I love the way that looked, because Savage just, as usual, made it look good. When you see Savage and Andre together, there's 3 words: no baby oil. Because you know, that documentary has now colored my perception of this match, and I guess distracts me a little bit, because one of the issues with Andre at this point is that he really needed to shave his sideburns, because it just made him look like shit. Because it just looked like he wasn't taking care of himself. But and that was like off and on. But Savage, he, for whatever reason, he always knew how to use his opponents and play off them, whether they be somebody with the all-around ability of a Ricky Steamboat or Andre the Giant at a point where, you know, his mobility is extremely limited.
Right.
And, like, the beginning of this match, the first like 4 or 5 minutes is as fast a paced Andre match post 1984 that you will ever see. And it's all because they're not moving all over the ring, but it's working a fast pace, like it within like the one corner.
Right.
The Andre break it four chokehold, I'm always a fan of that, because he's a complete monster who will choke you, but he's also smart enough and reasoned enough that I'm going to break at 4.5 and then start choking you again immediately. That's a spot of his that when he was extremely limited that I really enjoyed. But can I talk about Jake and Randy Savage being together here? 'Cause like, they are just forever intertwined in the history of Saturday Night's Main Event. Thinking back 2 years to when they had their famous, well, somewhat famous heel versus heel match,
yes,
where
excellent.
They thought that Savage was going to be cheered, and Jake was the one who got to be cheered. And then in a couple of years, you'll get to something with Jake and Savage that'll be quite fun. And there was a nice save by Vince on commentary where, how would Savage know where the bag is? And like, well, and Vince is like, well, maybe Savage and Jake are coordinating efforts, Jesse. I'm like, whew. Good thing Vince was there. I don't think Gorilla would have had the wherewithal to
pick that up, yeah.
to kind of save that. But how ironic was it that, given what would happen years later, that Savage lets Jake in the ring and hassle a guy with a snake who's tied in the ropes?
Well, that's what he learns later. He realizes, you know, he atones for his ways.
It kind of makes me wish that these guys were aligned a little bit more. And with apologies to, you know, I kind of wrote a song in celebration of these two guys together. With apologies to the producers of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix, if you'll indulge me.
That's what we do.
Macho and Snakey being best friends, taking down giants, the fun never ends. Macho and Snakey advancing angles one day at a time. Macho and Snakey, two of a kind. So yeah, I really enjoyed this. 3 stars.
I was hoping you were going to do like the auto tune. I thought it was going to be like the intro theme for the show. Where they...
I didn't have my little tune thing that I blow into beforehand.
Oh, but yes, it was. yes, it is. It was unique to see them, and you're right. They are tied in throughout the Sinus Main Event history as friends and bitter enemies, as we'll see. And yeah, that November 86, I haven't really looked back at our grade, Scott. Do we still consider that the top, or was that surpassed? I know for a while we kind of had that as our benchmark Sinus Main Event match.
Which one? The
Savage and Jake.
Savage Jake. Let's take a look.
We had that. We both had it at 3.5.
Yeah, I don't think anything's come close.
And incidentally, like this match, that was a double DQ as well, I think.
Yes. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it definitely was. And you had 3.5. You had 3.5 for Hogan Orndorff, Scott. I only had that at 3.
Oh, the cage? Okay, right.
Let me check quick that. Serious Movement didn't have anything. I had Bulldog's Hearts in May of 87 at 3.5, but you had it at 3. And then
Bravo for Tara last month.
That was the hair versus hair match. That was 5 stars.
Savage Honky, we had a 3.5 in October, both of us.
Okay. So close.
So we have them tied. We also had Savage Heart. We had Savage and Brett at 3.5, both of us. So for a while, it was the best match. Like at that point, it was right. The best match in Sinus Main Event history. It's been tied a couple times, but nothing surpassed it. It's at least tied as best match.
Yeah, we're going to be very hard pressed to even find maybe a 4-star Sinus Main Event match. And we of course have
that's coming.
Oh, I can pick a one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me think. Oh yes, I know what you're talking about. Yes. Yeah, we'll coming up in next the following year. Yes,
nope,
I know
that's not the one I'm thinking of. But we'll see. Okay.
Well, I'm thinking of a different one. Okay.
Why don't we take a break and we'll decide. We'll talk about it off air. And then we'll...
Yes.
Like three idiots.
So what do we got so far, JR? Not too bad?
Yeah. Well, Savage Andre saved things a bit. We got off to a kind of a shaky start quality-wise. Mm. But and I can also see, like, if you're in the New York area and you went to that MSG, like, kind of being burnt at this point. But you have that Thanksgiving, you get Sorry Series, and you go to the show, and then maybe you tape this or come home, you know, whatever. It's that's a lot of wrestling. And then, like, by this point, when you're that many hours in to then have to watch, you know, 2 squashes to open up the show, you're probably like, all right, I'm done with Dodie F for this week. But it's – no, it's been okay.
Not bad. Peter, what do you think?
Well, you know, I kind of do like it better as they build to something a little bit better in the show. But there is some you think of Saturday Night's Main Event as being really front-loaded, but this one kind of builds up in the middle and then drops off almost like a bell curve or something.
Mm-hmm.
So when we return, we will have a couple matches left and a pretty big interview segment, that may carry the second half of the show. But first, some words from JR and Chad about the great show. Because
will be green and bright, the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night. Melikilikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. And in addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB in Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post-Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows, plus others available at PlayStation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Scott Hudson, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast with Scott and Justin.
Everyone's having a wonderful time here on this PTB podcast episode. Of course, Christmas season is upon us, so you're hearing some Christmas music playing us in, and also because it's the third episode we've had this week, we do not have a number one song to really get into, but Scott Criscillo does have the full Billboard Top 10 here to kick off our pop culture corner, and I will let him go ahead and lead us through that.
All right, thank you, JR, and We kind of teased the full Billboard on the last episode because we're in the same weekend and we can't wait to get out of November of 88. Oh, I feel like we're in like the DeLorean is on wheel spinning. But as we talked about last week, Bad Medicine is the number one song in the country again. Let's go through the rest of the list quickly. Number two was Baby I Love Your Way and the Freebird Medley by Peter's favorite band, Will to Power. At number three. JR's favorite band, U2, with Desire from the new album Rattle and Hum. And
I have a desire to never hear U2 again. That's my desire.
I saw Rattle and Hum in theaters. We'll talk about that someday. Number four, How Can I Fall by Breathe. At first you're wondering what the fuck that song is, but that's the How Can I Fall. You know the song if you hear it. Number five, George Michael, Kissing a Fool. Number six, Look Away from Chicago. Number seven, I Don't Want Your Love by Duran Duran. Number eight, Wild Wild West by The Escape Club. Number nine, Giving You the Best That I Got by Anita Baker. And number 10, The Locomotion from Kylie Minogue. So there's your top 10 that came out that day, November 26th, 1988.
No song that's like La 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 Locomotion. Is that the Kylie Minogue song?
No, it's the remake of the one from like the.
It was a joke. You know,
come on, but oh damn it!
Grand Funk Railroad, baby.
Yeah, that's even better.
I live on like Grand Funk Railroad.
You probably actually just hummed a real song. So
I did. It was the other Kylie Minogue song. That was the point.
Maybe she redid both. Maybe she did a remix. Maybe she remixed both. Maybe Kylie Minogue will take the field.
The show can't get canceled quick enough.
Just like the Patriots blew that game last night, Peter Winston's going to blow this two-game lead to close out the 1988 season.
Yes, it is. This is this will be the final week of picks for the 1988 season because by the
and
time
then, just like Bill Belichick broke up that marriage, I'm driving up to Boston. It's over for you, Winston.
That's right.
And then, just like he aided and abetted that serial killer, I'm going to find Michael Vincent and hide him in a flop house.
And then when...
And then, like when Bill Belichick illegally filmed other teams' practices, I'm going to sneak into Chris Zellner's house and illegally film between the sheets being recorded. I may not have enough tape, but I'll get through it.
Let's do the locomotion.
And then like when they illegally deflated the footballs.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I have 5 Super Bowl rings clogging my ears.
I'm going to deflate this joke. Okay, let's go.
All right, let's go. All right, 1988. This is week 14. So this is, of course, we already did the previous week. We did this current weekend, and now it is time to do the following weekend, which will be the final weekend of picks because by the time we meet again in late December, we will be in the playoffs. So as mentioned, JR, his 3-year run as champion is precarious right now as the house has a 2-game lead.
Let's be honest, Peter has a 2-game lead because Phillips didn't do shit and Atherton lost, so...
Yeah, D'Amato, and then you split with D'Amato. So really, Peter.
No, I didn't do it.
Your court,
did I?
Yeah, the first 2 weeks, you beat him.
Oh,
by
I
two,
missed
and
those. That's right. Sorry.
Yep.
Well, there's a blank line in between. I didn't scroll up high enough. Sorry, John. Yeah.
So yes, just to recap again.
No, you forget about you. Always forget about John.
So yes, just to recap, JR and D'Amato split the first two, and then Peter beat you by 3. Greg split, and Andy beat Andy by 1. So this is it, Peter.
All right.
2 games you got in hand. It is week 14.
Now listen, I believe when you're in this position, and you got 1 week left that you throw shit at the wall, this would be different. So there's a good chance I lose by like 7 at the end of this year, but I want it to be known that it's a strategy. It's a strategy.
Okay. All right, let's see.
In the immortal words of Chuck Person, if you're going down, you're going down standing up.
I'm going down, going down big, babe.
Chuck Person. All right, so we're doing the following week, December 4th, week 14. All right, let's begin at the Silver Dome in Pontiac, Michigan, where the Lions host the Green Bay Packers, JR.
I will take Detroit.
Peter?
I will go with Detroit also.
Jerk.
Lions win 30-14. So the lead is still 2.
Thanks.
Let's go to the Dog Pound in Cleveland. The Browns hosting the Dallas Cowboys. Peter.
Brownies.
Yeah, me too.
Brittany Kozar throws for 308, and the Cowboys lose 24-21 in what would be, of course, I can say it now since next time. We talked the regular season will be over. Tom Landry's final season.
What a shame.
Let's go down to the big sombrero in Tampa. The Bucks hosting the Bills, JR.
All right. I'm going Tampa.
Okay. Peter?
All right. I'll give you I will go with Buffalo.
Oh, I don't have any faith in this, but I'm trying to be different, like I said.
All right. Jim Kelly throws for 249 yards. But the Bucks win!
Woo! Give me those creamsicles, baby.
Wait, 10-5?
10-5.
What the fuck happened?
10-5. Let's go to the box.
Sounds like the numbers that what's his name? Lost the cookie bar, lost the election by.
That's right. Yes. 10-15.
Are we sure that's not like a Sabres Lightning game or something?
Well, the Bucks were 3-10. The Bills were 11-2, actually. So that was a big upset. Let's see. John Carney.
Was that good that year? I've been picking against them every time. Thinking they were.
No, this was beginning of this was kind of the beginning of the Bills' rise.
Oh, the Bills. I thought you said the Bucks were 11-2.
No, the Bucks were 3-10.
Oh, I was going to say.
The Bills were 11-2.
Oh, yeah, no, that I believed.
John Carney with a 29-yard field goal made it 3-0 Tampa. Then Vinny Testaverde with a 4-yard touchdown bootleg made it 10-0. Testaverde was tackled in the end zone for a safety to make it 10-2, and then Scott Norwood kicked a 30-yard field goal, and that was your final 10.
Oh, now Scott Norwood kicks a field goal in Tampa.
So there you go. All right, so that's down to 1. All right, let's go now to Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati. The Bengals hosting the San Diego Chargers. Peter.
Bengals.
Yeah, I'll take Cincy.
Boomer Esiason throws for $178. Icky Woods rushes for 141 yards. Bengals win 27-10. Let's go to Fulton County Stadium in Atlanta, where the Falcons hosting the San Francisco 49ers, JR.
Going to go Niners there.
Peter?
Yeah, San Francisco.
And the Niners do win. Closer game than expected, 13-3. So not a lot of scoring. Yeah, not a lot of scoring this week. Let's go to the Philly. It's week 14.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's not like we're at the end. Like guys are resting or anything.
Right. Let's go to the vet, where the Eagles host the Washington Redskins, Peter.
Washington.
All right. Jared. I will take Philly.
A nail biter at the end. Redskins by a point.
20-19.
The Redskins win. So the lead back up to 2. Mm. Let's go to Giants Stadium in the Meadowlands, where the New York football Giants host the Phoenix Cardinals. Let's see who it is. JR.
I'll take the G-Men.
Giants, yeah.
Giants win big, 44-7. Let's go to Foxborough, which was probably empty that day, as the Patriots host the Seattle Seahawks. Peter.
They weren't terrible that year, so I think Patriots.
I'm going to say this time Seattle ran at the goal line like they should have in the Super Bowl, and they win the game.
No. Patriots win 13-7.
Did Flutie start that game?
Let's take a look. Dave Craig threw for a whopping 62 fucking yards. Although, is it John Stevens? He rushed for 121 yards. Let's see how this game went. All right. Jason Starofsky.
Yes.
Starofsky with a 34-yard field goal, 3-0. Then a 22-yard field goal, 6-0. Rav Butler, a 27-yard pass from Dave Craig, made it 7-6. And then Derek Cornett. And then Bob Perryman?
Yeah,
Bob
Robert Perryman. Perfman.
I don't have my bifocals. 1-yard touchdown burst. 13-7.
I think we found Trent Williams' new chat nickname, Bob Perfman.
Bob Perfman. Spoiler Perfman.
But Flutie did start that game, right?
You know what? That's the one thing we didn't look at. Let me see. Let's see who started.
You read every other worthless stat.
Flutie, 5 of 10, 47 yards, and a pick.
Wow, better than Brady yesterday. The thing about Flutie, he never lost a game in Foxborough as a starter with the Patriots, and yet they refused to just start him in all the home games. I don't know why, but they weren't very bright back then.
Yeah. All right, so JR, down 3 with 6 games to go.
Yeah, I'm going to likely lose by 9, but it's fine because I'm just going to start taking the underdogs.
Okay, let's go to the Orange Bowl in Miami. The Dolphins hosting the Colts, JR.
I will take the Colts.
Peter?
You know, screw Miami, and I don't mean to be a dink here, but I'm going Colts because screw the Dolphins.
What the fuck?
Dan Marino throws for 304 yards. Eric Dickerson for the Colts rushed for $169. The Colts win 31-28. Dink.
It's always cheating.
So still a three-game lead with 5 left. Let's go to the mausoleum in L.A., the Raiders hosting the Broncos, Peter.
I'm not picking against Bo Jackson and the Raiders.
All right, I'll take Denver.
John Elway threw for 324, but the Raiders win 21-20, which means that JR has to run the table and get the next 4 games correct.
If Peter's a real man, he'll let me pick first and always pick against me and see how the odds go.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see. All right. 4 games left. Let's go to the Metrodome in Minneapolis. The Vikings hosting the New Orleans Saints. JR.
I will take Minnesota.
Peter?
Be a man, Winston. All right. I'll take the Saints, I guess.
Like a Brian Adams singing behind me.
Vikings win big, 45-3.
All right.
Look what you made me do.
Be a man, Winston.
3 with 3 to go. JR, you can pick first again. Let's go to Arrowhead for the Chiefs and the Jets, 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 Jets.
Chiefs at home.
Peter's like, you fucking jerk.
All right, I'll take the Jets.
Steve DeBerg throws for 267. Chiefs win 38-34. Wow. Down two with two to go.
All right.
Let's go to the Astrodome in Houston. The Oilers hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers. JR?
Houston.
Peter?
All right. As much as I dislike the Steelers after yesterday, I'll be a man and take them.
JR? Pass the trophy over. Steelers win 37-34.
Yes.
Bobby Brister throws for 311. That's how bad.
Le'Veon Bell runs for 200 yards.
All right. And just to wrap things up to make it official, Monday night in Anaheim, the Rams host the Bears. JR.
Bears.
I'll go with the Rams.
Rams win 23-3. Oof. So there you go. The house wins. Andy Atherton gets credit for nothing. There you go. Have a fun season, folks. And the next time we get together in December, it will be, I believe it's divisional playoff weekend. So we'll see what's going on in the 1988 NFL playoffs. Can the Redskins repeat as NFL champions?
Who cares?
Before we move on, let me double check. I'm not sure if we – I think we mentioned the NBA games, but let's just confirm and see if the Kings actually did play on that evening in their new building. Let's take a look. Saturday night wouldn't surprise me. Probably against the Lakers or somebody that they can get a lot of – that can fill the house. At the time, let's see, Lakers, or maybe the one game the Celtics come to town. Not sure.
Poor Sacramento. They've had about 3 good years since they moved there 30-something years ago.
Yes. Let's see. Oh, a lot of games on tap. And as a matter of fact, yes, the Arco Arena, the new building, the Kings hosted the New Jersey Nets in the big game at Sacramento. And
Drazen Petrovic have a good game?
As we pretty much anticipated, the Kings lost. The Nets beat them 98-97. Why? Because the Kings were 1-9.
Oof.
There you go.
Main event in any arena in the country, Scott.
All right, let's get back to the show. Gene is backstage talking to Jim Duggan, who talks down on Bravo and Frenchie if they get in his face with that French-Canadian flag. He then talks about taking aim at Boris Zukov tonight, and Old Glory will proudly wave. And that does bring us to our next big match, and that is Hacksaw Jim Duggan taking on Boris Zukov. Boris gets 6 seconds of the national anthem before Duggan cuts him off by power walking out to the ring to Stars and Stripes Forever, toting a giant flag. Duggan stomps around after Zukov to start and then slugs away and knocks him to the floor. Jesse says he shouldn't even bother attacking Duggan's head because there's nothing in there. Zukov catches Duggan with his head down. Jesse calls him dumb and an idiot. Duggan comes right back and he and Boris trade some basic strikes on and off. Duggan levels Boris with a clothesline, follows with a slam. And then the 3-point stance for the easy win. Another squash here, full of full-on showcase mode, Saturday's main event. Duggan waves Old Glory as per the stipulations to wrap this up and continues to be on the trail of that old maggot Dino Bravo. I went big old dud, nothing doing here. And really, outside of that Savage match, just kind of a blasé Saturday's main event, Peter.
Well, in the promo beforehand, not to be outdone by Jesse's Kuta Kinte slave references earlier, Duggan made a reference to squashed frogs in reference to Dino Bravo.
Yes.
And like, I thought that was a sprinkling of racism there.
Yeah.
But the other thing with Duggan is, did you see how high his trunks came up on his waist?
Oh yeah. I mean,
what the hell is like, did he like buy those trunks from Jimmy Valiant or something?
Maybe he had a diaper under there after Thanksgiving. You know, he said.
Well, he actually thought ahead to the point where we're taping it before Thanksgiving, but I want it to look like I'm having a diaper on after Thanksgiving.
I gotta look real bloated.
Duggan was way more thoughtful than you might have thought. Mm-hmm. But I also hate him because he cut off a rare chance to hear Boris Zukov singing. Usually we get Nikolai, but oh my god, this thing was dull, slow motion. I mean, when I was watching this, it was probably about 11 o'clock at night, and I'm like struggling to like, you know, stay awake for this one. So half a star because I did manage to stay awake. And a nice little gag after the match as they're because this flag match, really telegraphing who's going to win, because has a Soviet ever won a flag match? A nice gag with Duggan singing, because yes, he looked absolutely preposterous, and it kind of made me laugh.
Pretty funny.
Yeah.
This was a piece of trash. I gave it a duds, 227. Duggan's tights always look like that. But yeah, Jimmy Valiant kind of had
not
shit
that bad
too.
Though. They were pretty high rised tonight, extra so.
Mm. Yeah. Obviously, the seems like the tone of this evening is to really kind of do the happy ending. Big holiday show where everybody smiles. So you've got, Savage keeps his title, and then you've got, a win for Hercules, a win for.
You can say too that we've talked about this time period being a real turnover, change of the guard, a lot of fresh faces. Hercules has a new face. Warrior's never been. So, I get it. It's just weird that they decided, and maybe they figured holiday edition, a lot of people going to be around. Maybe they just figured we're going to just kind of use it to get some guys over and throw the one big title match and call it a night. But
right.
And no one's getting a happy ending with those trunks on.
Except whoever has to change the diaper. I gave it a dud. And Zhukov, at least Nikolai, even though Nikolai isn't Russian, at least he seemed to kind of know what maybe the song sounds like. I don't know what the fuck. He's only singing Portuguese.
It's like the Swedish Chef.
Yeah, Nord. Looking horrible. Oh my god, so bad. But
poor Jimmy Nelson
again. Yeah, again, easy win for Duggan because we need a happy match, and there you go. So.
Stupid. All right, we get clips on the Brother Love show when the Big Boss Man is slick battered Hulk Hogan, and that brings us to Brother Love, who comes out and puts over Boss Man's recent actions and what's to come. Then he brings out his guest for tonight, Slick, who he calls a real American, teasing Hogan at first. We then see Hogan and Gene in the back, wondering what's going on because Slick and Boss Man were not supposed to be there. After break and some more trolling, he brings Hogan out. Love gets at Hulk's face and talks shit about Bossman beating him up. Slick says Hogan has the face of a criminal and is guilty of losing control. They keep cutting off Hogan to booze so they can make fun of him. Hogan finally rips the mic away and rants about Love and says he'll teach them what Hulkamania is all about. He rants some more about Brother Love being phony and says he'd be charged guilty in the court of Hulkamaniacs and he'll pass the execution. Hogan chucks Slick to the floor and shrugs off a Brother Love punch, slams him down, cuffs him to the ropes, and clotheslines him hard over the top. And then does his posing to a pop. Jesse says Hogan always resorts to violence and is a bully. Fun segment to keep Hogan and Boss Man brewing differently. Brother Love's a great troll, and the crowd ate it up. So they just saved the show a little bit again. A hot segment. And I'm glad they did this instead of just like a Boss Man squash or something. Like, this added a lot more heat. And it gets Brother Love on Science Man Event for the first time as well. So again, you're introducing another new character. And he really took a hard clothesline over the top. Hogan's obsessed with murder. I've really noticed more and more, both on Wrestling Warzone and here, he's always threatening to kill his opponents. I don't know what's going on.
Yes.
He seems to work it in a lot, Scott.
Yes. No, he definitely did. He definitely does. I don't know. We're in your era that you and Chad are doing, it kind of makes sense because things are a little different in 95, early 96, but here, it's a little gruff, particularly on national television. We're not even talking the Cindys, where the drunken New Yorkers are listening. We're talking like the kids that are watching on a Saturday night. This was good. You don't see this very often, where they'll take time on Saturday Night's Main Event to do an elongated promo. But you wanted to get Hogan. We got Hogan and Savage on the show, which is what everybody is what you like to have, particularly a holiday week. And like I said, we used to say, JR, I'm curious your thoughts on this too, Peter, about how back in the early days of Saturday Night's Main Event, we used to talk about like theme shows. They used to do the holiday specials, Halloween, and then they would do like the one year they did the water park and all that stuff. And I feel like sort of to a certain extent, but much more subtly, they still do that. And I feel like they did it this weekend. It's a holiday weekend, Thanksgiving.
Well, they do like
Survivor Series.
Yeah, they kind of do a lot of like puns. But we really don't get the themes anymore. Like, they come back in 90, but I think after like 86, they kind of phased away from like the full-on theme episodes. Like you said, we had the water. Like they used to like kind of take on the personality of where they were. Right. They've done a lot less of that. And right. I think you're right to an extent. Like they'll make the puns and they'll talk about the holidays. In 90, we'll see it come back hard.
Yeah.
The gimmicks.
I'm saying more, too. Yeah, no, I agree. I'm saying more, though, that you know, we're getting all these babyface moments, babyface wins. Savage keeps the title. Nice, you know, extended Hogan promo. We're getting all the things we want to see. We're not getting, like, you know, Bundy beating him down like in 86 and things like that. Everything's happy tonight to kind of go along with the theme of the weekend. Holiday weekend, everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's festive. Duggan's crapping his pants. Everything's great. But you know, it's kind of fitting. Anyway, Peter, good promo. You know, advancing Hogan, taking on other heels while, you know, Savage is doing his thing. Hogan's doing his thing. But they're still both the top baby faces. But yeah, I feel like, what are your thoughts on that? Now, again, JR's right. We're not talking full blown, Jesse dressed as a pilgrim like he was at Survivor Series, but we have, you know, like it's festive. Everybody's in a good mood. Baby faces are shining, kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? Like the mood is very upbeat on a holiday weekend show.
Oh, this was really good, especially for this point in a Saturday night's main event. Usually, something like this would be much more towards the front of the show because. But I guess that they decided, well, we're going to have Hogan out there and maybe we can hold the audience until he gets there, which would probably correspond to about 12:40. Eastern time, something like that. One thing I noticed about this, and I'm glad I watched this on my computer, because if I watch it on the Roku that doesn't have little time markers, they didn't have a marker for this segment,
No.
Which I thought was a little strange, because none of these guys have committed multiple homicides like Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Famer Chris Benoit. And then I realized that Bruce Pritchard has committed multiple homicides against the truth on his podcast. So,
Hogan's not dropped from those buttons, right? I mean, he's back.
No. Now, oh, no.
But this wasn't a match either.
So it made it look like Duggan and Zukov were super long, huh?
Yeah. They went at it for 27 minutes.
Felt like tight stick.
Yeah. I love the way they set this up. I mean, that boss man beatdown mm-hmm. on Hogan on Brother is so great. The way he was just wailing on him. But so when Hogan's backstage and they do the slick coming out, and when Hogan sees it, the look on his face when he's standing there with Oakland, you would think that Slick was dating his daughter instead of, yeah. Well, all right, maybe that joke's a bit dated, but no, it's not. I am so wildly impressed to pull it back with Bruce Pritchard, with how he took that bump.
Yes.
Handcuffed to the ropes for a guy who apparently on his podcast, he said that they worked on it earlier that day and how he's supposed to do it. But when the money was on the table, he pulled it off.
Yeah, that was a nasty bump.
Another interesting thing that I noticed, and why do I always look at this stuff? Hogan's knee pads were way below his knee. It's like he was imitating Ric Flair for some reason.
Well, it wasn't an action. He had him down, and then when it came time to throw down, he'd pull him up.
Jesse says, is this how Hogan responds? And I'm like, no, Jesse, he sues. He files a lawsuit in federal court. The other thing that was interesting is that they always take great pains to not refer to Brother Love with any sort of religious connotation.
Oh, yeah.
And
definitely.
At one point, they referred to him as a, quote, man of the cloth. And I don't know if that – I think that might have been Hogan who said that. And that was kind of a rare slip because a man of the cloth obviously is, you know, connotation right. for a clergyman or whatever. But I never really got that out of that. But overall, I really like this segment, and I don't think anybody had beaten up Brother Love before this point. So it was kind of a big moment in terms mm-hmm. of that character.
And the Hogan Boss Man almost feels like a forgotten feud for Hogan because nothing yeah. really, you know, you don't really get. I guess you get the main event, but that almost is focused more on the Mega Powers. So. They don't really get that big pay-per-view showdown. Sorry, there's kind of, but I feel like it's lost a time because they don't really have a big singles match, but just how good it was and how important it is. Like, it plays such a big role in the main event scene. And then, of course, folks remember the Cage Match. So I feel like you remember like bits and pieces of this era, but maybe not kind of how hot the feud started, you know? With that beatdown, like we said on TV.
Yeah.
All right. Jesse is backstage. He is with the Fabulous Rougeau brothers and Jimmy Hart, and they have a big scoop for Jesse in the world. The Rougeaus have officially moved to Memphis and are now good old American boys. So again, showcasing this for the NBC audience, showing that they, you know, getting over the whole fact that the Rougeaus are now in America. They've been teasing for a year almost that they're coming. Here they are. And that brings us to our final match of the night. That is the Fabulous Rougeau brothers taking on the Young Stallions. Stallions apparently still a duo, even though it seemed like they were done. So they must have probably broken up between this and Survivor Series, I guess. Because the Survivor Series, Brunzell's got that those tie-dye pants, and Blair is gone, right? So, I mean, wait. Definitely mixed up with the Bees and Stallions. My apologies. The Bees were done. But I feel like the Stallions were done almost done, too. Because didn't we see them in separate matches or something recently? Was it the last house show? Was it Roma?
The last house show.
And Powers,
yeah,
was
Powers,
in, like, Detroit,
we,
or whatever.
We had Roma. Roma took on Hennig, and yeah, then at our show, and then in Detroit, Powers took on Akeem, I think. No, we had Akeem. Somebody. Maybe it was Boss Man.
Might have been Zukov.
Might have been Zukov, yeah. So Powers was taking on Zukov, and Roma was taking on Hennig.
Were you guys
going
to stop me or just keep letting me go, comparing the Bees to the Stones?
I was gonna see how far you would go.
Oh, God. Yeah. It's late. It's been a long weekend. All right, Rougeaus are locked in his heels here. Stallions apparently, like I said, hanging around. Jimmy Hart and the Rougeaus are both smarmy and dickish as ever. Jacques works on Powers to get us underway, smashing him with a nice drop kick. Powers comes back, punches away in the corner, but Jimmy nails him for the apron to give the Rougeaus control. They tag in and out, pick up a couple of near falls until some miscommunication allows Powers to make the tag. Roma comes in hot and cleans house, getting two on a cross body. Things break down, and in the confusion, the Rougeaus hit Le Bomb for the win. I thought this could have been good with some time, but again, just like there's been the theme of the night, another showcase into the semi-squash, doesn't really go anywhere. I win a star on this, Peter.
Their character work in this role is so amazing to point where the thought of Jacques Rougeau, just, you know, in particular, I'm just going to focus on Jacques. Him as a babyface versus a heel, you book him as a babyface, I want to punch that person right in the mouth, because that's bush. That is absolute bush. Mm-hmm. The Rougeaus moving to Memphis is a certain foreshadowing of the Vancouver Grizzlies also moving to Memphis. So Canada and Memphis, longstanding rivalry dating back to the 80s. I want to say that this has to be it for the Young Stallions. I mean, who gives a shit about them?
Right, yeah.
But the Rougeaus, their moveset is so underrated. They had a lot of great double team moves. You know, you talk about tag teams of the 80s. There are other teams always get talked about ahead of them. But I don't know. The Rougeaus always seem to get lost in the shuffle, even when they get into 89, you know, as we'll see going forward, they never quite get over that hump, because
I think they never had that big pay-per-view match or feud. I think that's why. Like, they always seem to just kind of be in throwaway matches on pay-per-views. And so I think for people that revisit it and maybe don't dive deep enough, they kind of get overlooked. The depth of the division, you know, was so big. And I think even when they get credit for being great characters, like, watching this really unfold, I mean, this was such a slow burn angle. They started teasing the shit, like, in April. You know, like, they were kind of shaking hands and doing the kind of faux, like, real over-the-top good guy stuff, like, in the spring. And then into the stuff with the Bulldogs. I guess they had the SummerSlam match, but they weren't really full-blown heels yet then. Yeah, I don't know. I think they just never really had that huge tag team title match or moment, like, in a big spot. Like, if they had given them a shot with Demolition, like at WrestleMania instead of the Powers of Pain or something. You know what I mean? Like, they never really got that shot.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. By the way, Jacques, me wanting to punch somebody in the mouth for booking Jacques as a babyface is a very Jacques Rougeau move.
yes.
Especially if I'm holding a roll of quarters at the time. But it is nice to see them get some shine, because, as we'll see going forward, it was a little bit thin on that, because I think they kind of got pigeonholed as a comedy heel act.
Yes.
And I think that's something that will bear itself out when we see who they are paired against a lot of the time for when they're on TV and pay-per-views. I gave it a star and a half because I really like their double.
I gave it a star, just like JR. I mean, not bad, not great. Stallions are cooked. I mean, as we've seen now over the last couple of months, the tag division is just getting so loaded. And then once we pull the cord into 1989, it really shows that we don't need these throwaway fucking teams anymore. And that's why I think instead of having them as a tag at the Garden, they split them up and really both had them job, in essence. And of course, Powers got stuck. I mean, obviously, you could tell who they felt had longer lasting, cachet by having Roma get the better wrestler and the better match than God only knows what the Jim Powers Borisukov match was. So, the Rougeaus were not taken seriously. That's actually a good angle, Peter. We don't really get it. We haven't really got into that much, JR, about the. Whether or not the Rougeaus were like taken seriously as a team for the long haul, you know, were they overdone as a comedy act? Did it hurt them the way they were booked with Jimmy Hart and stuff? Like, did it take away from what they could have been as legitimate workers? You know.
Yeah, and then they get they kind of have the stuff with the Rock. Like, it's just never really. Yeah, I don't know. They just never get that big push in that role, and it's almost too bad that Ray was ready to hang it up by 90 because if you look at the tag division after 90, like, there's a glaring hole that they could have filled. Then, you know, eventually the Quebecers show up and everything. But, like, picture like the Rougeaus in 92 when that division is so empty, what they could have made, they could have maybe been the kingpins of it as heels. Just a tough timing. There's so much depth. They were behind so many teams, especially like when the Brainbusters came in. You know, like, now they're behind them. On the heel ranks, like, they just turned heel, and then they immediately get pushed behind them. The Powers of Pain turn heel. The Hearts flip, but they were pretty much cooked anyway. So it's just all of a sudden you're behind a bunch of teams, even though you just turned. So it was just a tough hole for them to climb out of. I would say the Powers of Pain were the biggest ones that got in their way. If they hadn't come in or been turned, and Demolition still turns, like, maybe the Rougeaus get that top spot.
Yeah. No, I agree.
You know what else hurt them a bit? I think the Hearts kind of being lukewarm and cool.
Yes.
Like that feud could have and should have been hotter. But the Hearts, like, the Hearts' face turn and where they are, like, they're just not being presented as a tippy-top team at the moment. And I wonder if that's part of it, too. Like, they weren't really in a heated feud with the Hearts. It was just kind of a feud. I don't know. Do you guys agree with that?
I do.
I just wish that, because they're both from Quebec, it's natural to compare them. I wish they could have swapped the level of push between them and Dino Bravo. since Bravo would be, like, always more towards the top of the card, and you just enjoy watching the Rougeaus a lot more, whereas, well, you know.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, it's not.
That other guy, yeah. No, yeah. It's a good point. I agree with you, JR. Hart Foundation were not the top faces. And I think a lot of that, I think the one thing about 88 that gets better in 89 is the balance of shine amongst the face and heel teams. I feel like 88 was a struggle because with Demolition at the top as heels, other good heels seem to have gotten held under their thumb symbolically. Whereas the baby faces all kind of lined up and then got jobbed out. So the tag division, sadly, I think they had to. I think the tag division had to sacrifice Demolition being that good as heels, that the other heel teams just kind of fucked around, while the babyface teams just lined up to get crushed. And now with Demolition, the babyfaces, even though they're still champions, they're in a different frame of mind right now. And creatively, now the heel tag teams can actually line up and look a lot better. Like the Powers of Pain. And unfortunately, the Rougeaus have kind of already, I don't know, that ship has already sailed. So I don't know if the Rougeaus, I know they're going to be around a little bit, but I don't know if you can put them in that level anymore that you maybe could have 6 months ago. 1989 will tell. as we're watching stuff, if the Rougeaus kind of still have that shine to be able to be a legitimate number one contender to face Demolition down the line. So it'll be interesting to see how they're look. I mean, what we know from a pay-per-view perspective, but with watching the Science main events and watching the MSG house shows, if the Rougeaus still have enough shine to be legit, or if they got kind of played out in other heels, because obviously some, you know, one awesome heel team, which will really stake its claim when we get into 1989, may have passed them. So, and that leads to the transition of Jimmy Hart having a great year in 1987 to Bobby Heenan having an incredible 1989, but we'll get there. So anyway, nice win for the Rougeaus, but it'll be curious to see when we get into 1989 if they still have enough shine to be a legit player in the tag division as heels. So.
Peter, anything else?
Anything, Peter?
No, let's just hope they don't get pigeonholed and paired with only guys from Quebec in six mans in 89.
Too many of those squashed frogs.
Or only paired up with, you know, guys from New Zealand.
Yeah.
all right. Jesse's backstage, talks to Andre the Giant and Bobby, who are just pissed and ranting. Andre grabs and shakes Jesse when he mentions the Fair of Snakes. Andre says Jake can come to the ring and fight like a man at any time. I love this promo. This is tremendous. Andre's just like dying on this table. Or was that last one? That was the last
one.
That was
the last one.
Yeah, that's right. Here he's just like shaking Jesse out of anger when Jesse brings it up, which is also great. Gene is there with Jake, who talks about the difference between men and snakes. He says they can sense fear and take and do what they want. He and Damian will not stop until they have totally consumed the giant. Gene's then with Hulk Hogan, who talks about what happened earlier and what's coming for the Boss Man. And Vince and Jesse then wrap us up. All right, when we get to our awards to close out this show, I think our match of the night seems to be fairly obvious on this evening, gentlemen. Savage and Andre.
Yep.
Okay. Absolutely, yes.
Cousin Junior, a little bit more open-ended tonight, but I am going with Warrior and Super Ninja, because Super Ninja somehow looked even worse than Boris Zukov. he was absolutely abysmal in there. So that's my call.
Yeah, I agree. It was pretty rough.
Hercules
and Virgil was pretty bad, but that opener was worse.
Actually, my lowest was Duggan versus Zukov, because at least the first two matches served a point and a purpose for something. That one is just to play the national anthem at the end.
God, Ninja was so bad. All right, Andre the Giant Award for the MVP. I went with Savage. It was close. Andre was real good, but I thought Savage was awesome in that match. His offense was tremendous. He was just on point. Andre almost overtook it with the promo at the end, but to me it was Savage's night.
Yeah, he's the straw that stirs the drink, and he was the one who – he got so much out of Andre in that 8 or 9 minutes.
Yeah, Savage, I agree. I mean, Andre was great. But the Hogan promo was nice, but this is Savage's time right now to still shine. He's still the top guy, and he deserved to have the top spot tonight. So, Savage.
All right, the Sandy Beach Award for the worst wrestler LVP of the night. This, I went with Super Ninja as well, who just was, again, awful.
Yeah, he was terrible.
Peter. I went with Virgil simply because he looked so terrible for a guy who was, you know, a wrestler at one time.
Yeah, but Super Ninja is currently a wrestler. He's fucking real.
Yeah, I know.
Like, he should be better than this.
But it got to the point where on commentary they're openly questioning whether DiBiase should get a new bodyguard. That's how bad he was.
All right. All right, best moments. I went with Andre in the ropes when Damian was getting yanked out. Like, that was, the crowd was going nuts. Kind of the highlight of the night, the peak of the night for me.
Yeah, not a lot of standout specific moments. I'll go with that too. I did like Jesse. I did like Andre shaking Jesse. That was pretty funny. But yeah, there wasn't really many individual moments tonight, so I'll go with that.
My vote is for DiBiase's jacketless promo at the start of the show. No, I'm not going to waver from this. It's Brother Love getting clotheslined while being handcuffed to the rope. I was just really impressed that they pulled that off so well.
All right. And our Morocco Award for the biggest juiced up guy. It was not as much competition as normal. There was no Dino Bravo out there. I guess Herc was here. He's always a contender. But I went with Warrior. I thought Warrior looked the biggest and most jacked up tonight? Peter.
Oh, I'm going to go with the super ninja who was so jacked that they had to hide all of his muscles under that bodysuit. No, it's Warrior, clearly.
Scott?
Yeah, Warrior. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely Warrior. Yeah. Savage was looking pretty pretty ripped, but not in the Warrior level, no.
No.
All right, and the Kenny P. Award for the worst hair of the evening. It's going to open up now that Patera's gone. I went with Jim Powers.
I thought Zukov's hair was pretty lousy.
Powers' perma mullet was looking rough tonight.
I'm going to, I mentioned it earlier with his sideburns. I'm going to give Andre this award, which is ironic considering that Patera was there when they cut his hair in the ring back in 84.
Maybe it's a show of solidarity.
Yeah. Mm. Patera should have given himself the same haircut, I think.
Howard's hair is pretty bad, but I'm actually going to go with Zukov and his and he's I'm going to go with the beard. No idea, but the beard just looked disheveled. Like, Andre, poor Peter's giving Andre's sideburns an F. So the beard was a little disheveled, but I mean, Power's hair is pretty lousy. I'll go with Power's hair, but Zukov's beard is pretty rough.
She's bald. She's bald. All right. Final overall grade of the evening. This was not a very good Saturday Night's Main Event to close out 88. Really kind of four showcase stinkers and then Savage Andre, which was good, but not even 3 stars. Brother Love may have been really the true highlight of the night. I went with a 4 out of 10 just because it's a breezy show and some stuff is still happening, but that's a pretty low grade for me on one of these shows. What'd you have, Peter?
Yeah, I also gave it 4 out of 10, even though I probably was a little higher on the individual matches because I was a little disappointed that there weren't as many great Jesse and Vince moments on this show because Jesse kept working the bit about how I get first billing and something about like this is California, my state, and it's like Jesse, Hollywood isn't Sacramento; they're not the same thing. I was very, I don't know. This left a lot to be desired.
If it wasn't for the Hogan promo, I think I would give this like a 3, even with the good Savage, because the rest of the stuff tonight was just not good. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it a 4-2 because the Hogan promo was good. And again, it was a typical holiday weekend, Saturday's Main Event. All the baby faces went over, everybody, except for the Rougeaus, but usually no one ever gives a shit about the last match of a Saturday's Main Event. We focused on the big baby faces, Duggan, Hogan, Savage, Warrior. Literally all the major players, which we don't get to see that often on Saturday's Main Event, but all the major players were on camera tonight. And that's what was needed for, that's what usually is looked for a holiday special. So I'll give it a 4, mostly because, there was a lot of shine, but the in-ring was the shits tonight. And if it wasn't for Hogan's, solid promo with Slick and Brother Love, it would probably be lower. I probably would have given it a 3, but Hogan bumps it up a point.
Okay. All right. So there you have it. The last Saturday's Main Event of 1988 is completed. So, Scott, we'll be back next week with our annual Christmas extravaganza.
Yes.
So buckle up for that. I think it was a good one. I think it's a good one.
yes, it is.
A lot of fun. And then we'll be back on January 8th. It's a Tuesday night with the last show of 88. That is the December 30th MSG. Ryan Everett will be here. His prize for winning the trivia contest at episode 500. So he'll be in the house. And speaking of prizes and podcast appearances, we have a little contest we're going to throw out for everyone. If you listen to the Christmas special, I guess they're dropping on Christmas Eve, and you reach out to me either Facebook, Twitter, email directly, not any kind of group message, message me personally directly, and I list every actor/actress that appears in the Christmas special. I'm not giving it to the most. You have to get everyone that appeared. Now, if you took part in the Christmas special, you're not eligible for this contest. And I'm not looking for the on-air character. I'm looking for the person that portrayed every character that appeared in this thing, whether it was themselves or somebody else. So if you can send me a list and identify every single person who took part in this Christmas special, you will be able to join one of two podcasts, your choice. You can be on the WrestleMania weekend preview main event or the Build to WrestleMania 5 Place to Be podcast. Both of those will take place in March time period. Actually, looks like maybe April for the WrestleMania 5 one, but it'll be in the spring. But so if you message me directly, list out everyone who participated in the Christmas special after Christmas Eve, you could appear on the show of your choosing between those two. So definitely check that out. It'll drop on the PlayStation Wrestling feed about a week from tonight, actually, Christmas Eve. So next Monday. All right, Peter, what do you got going on? Anything you want to plug?
Greetings from Allentown. The show that is currently out is on PWF, which is Professional Wrestling Federation. So it's very on the nose for what it is. It's from Florida, 1989, basically centering around Terry Funk, Dusty Rhodes, and a lot of other familiar faces like the Nasty Boys, Blonde Scott Hall, you know, people that you would really come to know later into the 90s. And this Thursday, I am covering the most loaded episode of Wrestling Challenge that you will ever see in your entire life.
Is it Money Inc. against High Energy?
Oh, this is way better. First of all, you get the explosion, the explosion of the new Dream Team as Greg Valentine takes on Dino Bravo, and you get a visit from the ghost of Dream Team past doing a run-in at the very end, a mysterious masked man. We also have Sergeant Slaughter has fun with fire.
Yeah.
And also the Big Boss Man goes to Toys R Us and plays a little prank on Gene Okerlund and so much more. And why does Gorilla Monsoon hate the Mountie so much? I'll explore that topic.
Very good. Okay. Be sure to check those out. Scott?
Well, of course, last week, as it's on PlaceToBeNation.com, an exceptional episode of the main event because my friend, your friend, JR, and all of our friends, the great Kevin Kelly, returned to join us on main event, talk a little New Japan, of course. He's the voice of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Mm-hmm. Talked a little bit about the year in wrestling in New Japan and what to look forward to in 2019. Of course, Wrestle Kingdom 13 coming up in a few weeks. Incidentally, two exceptional podcasts you mentioned, JR. There's a good chance that Kevin Kelly might be also on that main event Mania preview. So there's a little tidbit for those that want to work hard at their cast. So if you message JR and you get it right, you get a good chance. But of course, we always have a great roundtable here as well. So two exceptional episodes you can choose from. We'll be of course we're off this week. Next week we will have a Christmas week edition of Main Event. A little laid back. We will be doing a TNA pay-per-view recap. And then have some fun about some other stuff. We probably won't dive into the year in review until 2019, but you should be seeing a main event dropping Christmas week. So,
all right, this rumor is circulating that No Holds Barred may be back this week. Aaron George is under the weather, but we're hoping by the end of the week he may be feeling up to it. That'll be a Christmas special for that. Wrestling Warzone, pause this a little bit. Chad's been just having a bear of a month at work with the year end. We're hoping to be back up and running after Christmas on the Warzone. We'll be picking up after Survivor Series 95, so now's your chance to get caught up there. Of course, every Saturday as well, you can hear Chad on the From the Vault, where the big boys play, as we move into 87, I think. We're almost through 86, I believe, on that. So be sure to check those out. Also, get your ballots in for the GWWE Tag Team Project, top 100 tag teams in grit and dirty history. Ballots close December 31st, so you got 2 weeks to get that in. Already got a nice number in, and we're hoping to keep it to see more rolling in as well. If you need full information, reach out to us, or you can join the Facebook page if you search. I believe you just look up PTBNG WWE Tag Teams or something like that. It'll come up. But be sure to get your ballot in. Check that out. And, of course, if you want to join up in the burgeoning the year that was project over at the message board, you can join in as that and that as well. We're going to be starting with 1996. We're going to be putting together kind of playlists for every month of 96. And then you go into the thread, share your thoughts. And then when we wrap up, there's a bunch of different categories you would weigh in as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to relive 96, mostly North American wrestling, but also some stuff from worldwide as well. So check all that out. PlayStation.com/Amazon if you're doing any last-minute Christmas shopping. And you can check out all of me and Scott's written archive on the right-hand side of PlayStation.com in ebook style or at Bigelow34.proboards.com. You can check out all of our reviews, our archive there as well, in addition to great conversation each and every day as we have relaunched that message board forum. You can talk wrestling, movies, TV, music, games, comic, sports, projects of Territory Wars if you're into fantasy booking and would like to be part of, I don't want to call it an eFed, but it's something along those lines. That's just about to launch into a draft. So if you want part of that, you can check out the board as well. So be sure to visit us there. Place number 2B Nation on Twitter, Place to Be Nation, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation on Facebook. I'm done. You're done. We're done. Everyone have a wonderful Christmas. Enjoy our Christmas spectacular. And be sure to take play, enter in the contest as well. Talk to you soon. Goodbye. Merry Christmas. Bought a red suited dude with a friendly attitude and a slave full of goodies for the people on the block. Got a long white beard. Maybe looks kind of weird. And if you ever see him, he can give you quite a shock. Now people, let me tell you about last year when the dude came flying over here. Well, the home was out, snow's on the ground. Folks stayed in, 240 down. The beat was thumping on the box, and I was dancing in my socks. And the drummer played at a solid pace, and the taste of the bass was in my face. And the guitar player laid down the heavy layer of the funky junky rhythm of the disco beat. And the guy with the 88 started to participate, and I could sure appreciate it sound so sweet. We were all in the mood, so we had a little food and a joke and a smoke and a little bit of wine. When I thought I heard a hoop on the top of the roof, could it be it wasn't me? I was feeling super fine, so I went to the attic where I thought I heard the static on the chance that the fans put somebody breaking in. But the noise on the top was a reindeer drop, just a trick, Saint Nick, and I let the sucker in. Holy moly, you got a lot of wishes on your chinny chin chin. He allowed, he was proud of the hairy little crowd on the point of the door where the skin should have been. Gets cool for a fool, going out every year for a day on the same when the cold is low. So the beard may be weird, but I'll never have a cheer, cause it's warm in the storm when it's 10 below. I said, yo, God, it's cold tonight, but can you stop for a drop before you go? He said, why not? If the music's hot and our chance is dead beneath the mistletoe. So he went downstairs and forgot his scare, and he rocked the spot and danced like a pro. And every young girl tried to rock his world, but he booked the yogi yogi till he had to go. And before he went, this fine old gent bought a gift with a slip through his big red bag. In the top or the bottom, he reached in and got toys for the boys for the girl's glad rag. And a grown-up's got some presents too, a new TV and a stereo. A new Seville by the bluest sky, the best that money couldn't buy. Cause money could never ever buy the feeling, the one that comes from not concealing the way you feel about your friends. And this is how the story ends. The dude in red back at the pole up north where everything is cold. But if he were right here tonight, he'd say Merry Christmas and to all a good night.
Your name was?
I see that it's not clear for you, good buddy, so clean out your ears. Listen very close while I pop more game, cause my name's in the Hall of Fame. The K-U-R, the T-I-S, the first is the best, I must confess. The B-L-O and the W, I make you wanna catch the Boogaloo crew. Now if your name is Andy, get up off your fanny. If your name is Todd, get off your backside. If your name is Steve, you don't need a seat, cause I'm Curtis Blow and I'm on the go. I'm rocking to the rhythms in stereo. Your hands in the air and rave on like you just don't care. If you're ready like Freddy to rock, wheels steady. Somebody say, oh yeah. Oh yeah. Our young ladies, all the ladies in the house say, ow. And you don't stop. Come on, come on, come on. Let me see you rock. I get down. Stop messing around when Curtis Blow is in your town. I'm Curtis Blow on the microphone. A place called Harlem was my home. I was rocking one day. It started to shake. And so to me, I like a earthquake. I packed my bags, I said goodbye, I kissed my woman and I started to fly. I came to Earth by a meteorite to rock you all on the mic. So just kick off your shoes, let your fingers pop, the Curtis Blow is about ready to rock. Now the people in the back, if you're not the wax, say, the people in the front, if you want to bump, say, the people in the middle, if you want to wiggle, say, and the people on the side, if you want to slide, say, or a teacher.
musician or electrician, a fighter or a writer or a politician, the man with the key to your ignition. Curtis Blow is competition. Young ladies, shock the house. Jazzy young ladies, shock the house. Now just throw your hands in the air and wave it like you just don't care. If y'all really ready to rock the house this morning, somebody say, oh yeah.
Wiggle in yo behind. Twice as nice, I'm skating on ice. When my mama gave birth, she made me